Ah, technical difficulties. Technical challenges. Welcome to the podcast for empathy and imagination. This is the only podcast with Aubrey Cloutier and
Drew Clark
as your hosts. Welcome to another sunny, beautiful day in Crockett, California. We are here at Gradient Studios. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing okay. I think, let's start with the check-in. Okay, how about you go first?
Okay, so my check-in. I'm going to check in with you all. Playing a lot of music as usual. A little bit stressed out because I got to move out of my house. It's always stressful. But then I think, what's the worst case scenario? And then my stress level goes down because worst case scenario isn't actually that bad.
What is the worst case scenario?
I didn't find an apartment. I would just, live out of the music studio or crash at a friend's place or sleep in the van.
You could do some combo studio and van. Combo. Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's a little stressful to move,
Yeah, totally.
Sick of moving. Yeah. And talking to an old friend, not really an old friend, an old personage from my deep past. And it feels like waking up from a coma or something, deep sleep, slumbering, leaving Earth and being in hypersleep for 25 years and then arriving at a new planet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's really cool. And yeah. How about you? How you doing?
I've actually found some peace in something. Lately I've noticed, I've shared with the audience here that I've felt some difficulty or trouble breathing or anxiety and chest awareness and breath awareness and feeling like there's something heavy on my chest. And it's been really bugging me. It sucks to be thinking about breathing all the time.
Yeah, it's supposed to be an involuntary action.
Yeah, but if you have to think about it constantly, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that for the last few weeks, thinking about most of my breaths, which is pretty terrible. But I stopped drinking coffee, and all of a sudden, okay, I feel 85% better.
5%?
85.
Oh, 85.
And now I'm 85% better.
That's significant.
Yeah. So I can feel little traces of those old difficult feelings, but it's sort of scaling down, and I'm going to take a break from coffee for a while.
How much coffee were you eating?
Eating. I was eating three cups a morning.
Just eating grounds?
Yeah. Just crunching it with my teeth. Yeah. Whole beans. Well, 3 cups in the morning. And then I would have an enormous shit, and then I would go to work and...
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
that's a lot of coffee.
I mean, I actually do poop a few times a day. Most people call that regular, but some people are afraid of that.
Of pooping three times?
Well, I don't want to jump ahead because it leads me into our topic.
Okay.
So my check-in. I'm playing a lot of music. I'm still thinking about leaning towards going into the pool route business. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling like I'll be able to make enough to live and slowly grow my thing and help people with what they got. So for some years, it's probably going to be a few years that I do that.
Are you still negotiating or what's?
Yeah, we're still sort of meeting the owners and stuff. There's a brokerage.
Ah.
It's very boring language. We need to set up a meeting to go over the client accounts with the brokerage, stuff like that. So, yeah.
That's cool.
I guess that's my check-in.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thanks for the check-in.
Feeling pretty good. So, we're checked in.
Checked in. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So, today we have a special guest. He's going to be arriving here a little bit later. Richard Morrison. He is an artist and a musician, and he has lived many interesting places, done many interesting things, and he's an interesting guy, so you all are going to get to meet him here in a little bit. So stick around. Before he gets here, I think we could probably start one of our topics. Do you have a topic that you would like to get into for now?
How about powerlessness?
Ooh, okay.
It's kind of a great feeling. It's a good feeling when something good is happening and you're powerless to change it. But it can also be a really unpleasant feeling.
Powerlessness, like surrender, sort of.
Yeah. Not being able to, not having power over things that happen.
Okay.
So I get, you know, uncertainty, maybe, powerlessness. Yeah, that's all I got.
Okay, cool.
No, any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I would equate that to surrender.
Like on a roller coaster.
Okay.
Is that pleasant? Is it pleasant that you're not in control? Or is it unpleasant?
I think it's pleasant. You get to let go and not be in control.
Yeah.
And
so it's dependent on the context, whether powerlessness is good or bad.
But it's a real thing. Powerlessness, I mean, it's like, I think you need it, and I think you also not need it. You need power, too.
Yeah.
So, like, powerlessness, when I apply empathy to that idea, it's like, well, it's needed and scary, too, right? So it's like,
it's very scary.
If it's a little scary, then you're sort of powerless to change it.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's really hot in here, but would you turn the lights up just a smidge there, sir?
These guys?
Yeah, we can't really see us too well. Thanks. That's actually a good bit better.
Okay, turn on the heat lamps, everybody. Enjoying a fine Sierra Nevada pale ale.
We are enjoying today Sierra Nevada's pale ale. So thanks, Sierra Nevada.
Thank you.
So powerlessness is like everyone experiences it. Yeah. And in fact, I think people experience it when they don't expect it. That's the whole powerlessness thing about it. If you try to have it happen when you want it to happen, that's still you being powerful.
And it can be, I think, addictive if you try to escape powerlessness.
Oh, just
constantly
like,
striving
oh.
for more status or power or control.
It's like,
but you can never have full control.
No, never. Well, also, you can never fully, you can't also fully let go of control either. Because then you get addicted to not making any decisions and not doing anything if you're just fed food and you can poop somewhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like powerlessness.
I think you get bored
too. Some people get complacent, and then depression, boredom, and complacency sort of become one thing. So people like to produce. People like to make things. Oh, we have a doggy.
Got a doggy visitor.
No doggies. Go.
Got all kinds of guests coming in here.
Well, we'll work it out. Well, we got that door open because it's freaking hot.
Yeah, it's another steamy day.
I might hose myself off and then come back onto the show here.
Gradient saunas.
Yeah. Well, at least we're sweating out the all the chemicals.
All the coffee.
Yeah, sweating my coffee out.
Sweating the coffee out of your pores. Probably stays in your system for a while.
Yeah, I should probably give it a week.
Yeah, coffee's so good, though.
I love it!
Do you put butter in your coffee?
No,
coconut
I would.
Oil?
I would. I usually just put whole, cream, half and half.
Yeah.
And that's it. No sugar. I don't need the sugar.
Right.
Hey!
Maybe just one cup. Three is a lot.
I think I need to take a full break for
a little bit. And not even decaf?
No, I don't want the acid. Just because I think the heartburn was happening, too.
Hey,
Ziggy, go away. This cute little dog.
By which I mean sit.
All right.
Where is she there? She's sitting.
Sitting. She's probably going to lay down in a sec.
Yeah. Ziggy. Well, okay, folks.
Yeah, so powerlessness, power... control. I mean, you want to be powerless sometimes.
I do.
Surrender.
Mm-hmm.
The act of love making, for example.
For example, massage.
Massage. So that's my, it's a brief topic, but that's my topic.
Okay.
And thanks for checking in on the topic.
Absolutely.
Do you have a topic?
Yeah.
What do you got going on?
Okay, I want to talk to you guys about... Well, human manure composting and fear of fecal matter. Huh. Fecal fear.
Fecal fear.
Yeah. So...
Sounds like a good band name.
Right. So let's talk about the
fecal fear.
Flush toilets called environmental disaster. So we're gonna bring up
fecal fear. Fecal fear. Welcome. So what prompted this topic?
Well, you know, I was doing some research and thinking about some things, and I realized that I care about it, and I have actually cared about it a long time. And I wanted to talk about it here. Let me just try to pull this little thing up here.
Poop concerns?
That is what I'm trying to do. There we go. Flush toilets called environmental disaster.
Flush toilets are called the...
Forget the convenience and sanitation of the flush toilet that industrialized nations have enjoyed for most of the past century.
Huh.
A growing number of people are now advocating the expanded use of compost or dry toilets worldwide to combat what they see as an international water crisis. Proponents of dry toilets, set to convene at the first annual International Dry Toilet 2003 conference in Tampere, Finland, August 2023.
Huh.
Oh, I think our guest is here.
Well, shiver me timbers.
Well, shiver me timbers.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
We'll come back to the pooping topic here.
Okay, you might introduce me to your dog. That's Ziggy there.
Hey, Ziggy. It's okay, Ziggy.
Sorry. I have a dog.
Hey, you made it.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi. Your dog doesn't like me.
Oh, it's not our dog.
Oh, okay, good, good.
Yeah. Come in, have a seat.
I feel different. We must allow dogs everywhere. Hey,
yes.
Dog. Just say, what's your name?
That's Ziggy.
Ziggy. Ziggy, hey Ziggy. It's okay. You're safe.
As in Ziggy Marley?
No, as in Stardust.
Ziggy Stardust.
Oh, okay, there okay. We go. That's different. You know,
some headphones for you.
Okay. Yeah, Zappa was tapped in. I wasn't a Zappa fan, but I had visions.
Okay.
Yeah. He saved my life.
Oh,
you know,
good.
It's a long convoluted story. Just like, you know, today I had a couple scoops of synchronicity, but that was a Dreamtime thing that lapsed over a couple years. It hit me hard.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like a kind of like acid.
Oh, good. Well, can you, as you get comfortable, can you scoot in so your mouth is about as close as my mouth is to your filter?
Yep.
So we can hear your sweet voice all over the airwaves.
Hello, everybody. Yeah, this is Roger Norton from Nebraska.
Can you hear the effects?
These guys are weird, man.
These guys are weird.
We're all weirdos on this bus.
We're allowed to be weirdos. It's all right.
People need to allow themselves to, you know, have their tails to wag. And, you know, I've become a dog owner now. And so I'm learning from being a dog father.
So good. We already introduced you, but please introduce yourself and just start with a little bit. Yeah.
Baba Nam Kevalam Singh from planet Trollfamador, and I got a download of some high-tech stuff when I was younger and allowed me to see things that people don't normally see. So I've kept it to myself, but it's time for this to...
Well, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thanks for doing it on the podcast.
Thanks
for empathy and imagination.
Yeah. Thanks for coming to the planet. Welcome to Earth.
Yeah, wow.
Thanks
for the release.
I'm trying to... there's this other guy, you know, it's like that movie K-Pax, you know, but Richard Morrison, I think.
Yeah, I know him. You know, I've known him some years,
always,
actually.
Always hurt ego. My mouth to say that name. I don't know. Just, this is something kind of like, you know, Howard apparently was my grandfather's name.
Howard.
Richard Howard, but he went by Howard.
Okay.
Huh. Anyway, he was, maybe knocked off by some high-end, he was... CEO for Standard Oil and
your grandpa.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He made the deal with the Saudis.
Oh,
in 1937. Yeah, shook hands with King Saud. The blades that he gave my grandfather just disappeared, actually. They were stolen, apparently, from my...
The swords he gave your dad?
Yeah, yeah, they weren't, like, you know, super valuable, but they were gifted. I think all this stuff's kind of, like, you know, not that interesting.
Somebody has those swords.
But it did change history, yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
How did you? How did the two of you...
I'm related to him. But that was a while ago.
If it wasn't for him, you wouldn't be here.
After I went to 12 Amadores.
Do you drink beer?
Sure, yeah, I drink beer.
So how did the two...
It's a nice hot day out here.
Here, let's...
Okay, cheers.
Yeah. Welcome.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah.
How did the two of you meet?
Being welcome is really nice. You know, we need to create welcomeness everywhere.
Right?
Indeed.
Yo-Yo Ma agrees. That was one of the themes. That was one of his themes at his show at the Greek Theater, was this sort of international embrace all cultures, but this idea, which ties into that, of welcoming.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers. And cheers to our viewers at home.
Okay. Here to all dogs.
All dogs. Yeah.
Cheers to everyone at home.
Confused and otherwise. We're all dogs at heart.
Yeah, totally.
Did you guys live on the marina nearby? Is that how you met?
I have a boat.
Yeah,
he had a mega yacht.
Yeah.
His was a veritable destroyer from like some kind of Mad Max movie.
Yeah. And then it died.
Did you have a name for your...
Naglfar.
Naglfar. Was that's from like a...
That's the ship like Loki sails. Loki sails in a port made of human bones.
Oh, okay.
And fingernails to signify Ragnarok, the end of the world.
Oh, okay. Huh.
So no big deal.
Comforting.
Yeah. Well, they made music in my recollection that kind of fit that.
We did.
Theme.
We made some symphonic black metal, and most neighbors were cool with it, right? Most people were like, "Oh, cool," but there were a few people who were like, "Absolutely not."
Yeah. I mean, I was rather forthcoming and rude about your music, but I did appreciate it deep down that there were people playing music in the... I'm, you know, a sitar guy, so...
Right. We played on the boat, I remember.
Yeah, yeah, it was fun. Yeah, yeah. I learned something about rhythm or something. I remember playing the drum. That was about it.
Okay. Well, that's...
And your dog was terrified of me.
Yeah, he probably still is. He's inside. I kept him inside.
What was your dog's name again?
Inferno.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we had a relationship, you know. I worked on him, you know, her.
Him.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
He was confused for a girl dog a lot, because he was cut pretty close, you know. They shaved him pretty short. So.
No, just on the subject of dogs real quick, since I can't get this off my brain, is that there's a girl that's in love with my dog.
Oh, okay.
A bit of a tweaker. Now, she just left this doesn't happen every day. She left, like, a whole... like pile of like mementos on my doorstep, I think at like 4 a.m, including a can of open dog food. So I know it was her.
Oh,
but her undies and stuff like that. She's in love, I think, with my dog Smitten. So you never know. There might be some kind of process, you know, in nature that there's a kind of commingling of these different animals to somehow magically birth a new form. I think ideally it would be like golden retriever human blend. You know,
okay,
you know,
so you're like long
really
golden
happy,
hair. Happy, loyal. Like,
you'd have a pretty good chance of long-term survival, I think.
Okay, well, golden retriever purebreds have a lot of hip problems, and, you know, statistically, they bite more people than any other types of dog.
No shit.
More than pit bulls.
Retrievers?
Golden retrievers.
No way.
Yeah.
Is that because they have a latent, like, schizoid gene or something?
Well, I think it's because there's more of them than anything else, and so it's just it's just a numbers
statistically,
game.
Statistically, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There we go.
Huh. But not necessarily, they're not necessarily more vicious.
No, not necessarily.
Huh.
I think poodles are probably the most vicious commonly known dog. I've had a lot of issues with poodles. Have you encountered poodles?
Yeah, we had a poodle. Yeah, they have a kind of... self-referencing that ignores, you know, outside is not your, it's not on the poodle team. You know, it's just,
I think they're pissed off because they look so silly.
It's a French thing, I think.
Oh my gosh.
They're cute. My poodle was actually a big-hearted guy back when I lived in Lafayette, and he was in love with our other dog, a Karen Terrier Tototype, and when Foxy Lady, the Karen Terrier, passed on. I mean, the poor poodle demonstrated his humanness, so to speak, his empathy, by howling, and it was in mourning for months. First, you know, genuine. Wow. You know, more genuine than you see, you know, most human beings behaving about.
Animals care. It's true. We've had a topic about interspecies relationships, definitely here. So okay, let's come back a little bit to you.
Oh, me.
Okay. No, like I want to. I've known you for a while, and we've jammed sometimes and partied sometimes and been neighbors. And I mean, you've always been interesting to me.
Okay.
And you always seem like a smart guy who's able to do a lot of stuff.
I've done a lot today already.
So you do a lot of stuff, and you play a lot of instruments. Like, what the fuck is in your left hand, for example? What is
this is just a tube I harvested from the recycle bin. I believe it's perhaps a attachment to a vacuum cleaner. But it makes a marvelous didgeridoo, and it has two sizes. So if your mouth
fits. Go ahead. Yeah, you're in the shot.
There we go. We need to mic the other end.
We can throw a mic on that thing.
You can do a trumpet. Now, I don't like practice this one, you know.
It sounds like an elephant.
It's like a safari.
Well, you can get the elephant if you yell through it. I don't like. Occasionally, I do this for kids. You know, the kids love it. It gets a nice, believable. You know, if you ever want to kind of freak people out.
If you ever want to attract other elephants.
You know?
Yeah.
There's an elephant in your neighborhood that can kind of like
they're probably on their way over.
Mystery and wonderment.
Can you digi us one more time?
Sure.
The other end?
At this angle?
The other end.
No, I mean, this is fun.
It works, though.
Not too
pretty
impressive.
Dark.
Nice.
I know you guys would like the music with like a little guitar, little like delay.
Oh, there we go. All right, so
you're trying to get to the bottom of who I am.
Yeah, so
like
you
that.
Were born in.
Were you born?
Or no, you came from another planet.
No, I actually was born in Summer of Love. You know, it was like
69.
Okay.
67. And
67.
Sweet Cars came out in that year.
I'm old, you know. But Summer of Love, San Francisco. It was a great time.
Wow.
Yeah, man. Natural childbirth. I came in. I got blotted, and I was like reborn. No, but I was raised in a very conservative family associated with the Rothschilds.
Huh.
And stuff like that.
People know that.
I always had resistance to it. I was,
you rebelled against it.
I think my spirit did. Even early on, I remember being chased in a shamanic dream and faced the demons, and I let them chop me up into little pieces and laughed at them because I recognized it was a dream, and it was their problem, not mine.
How powerful of you.
It was a good thing that I had those instincts at a young age, I think. But then I forgot.
So you were in the Rothschilds kind of orbit? Like, you're not a Rothschild, but you were around when they were doing stuff.
I wasn't connected really at all, just I saw, you know, my father worked as a stockbroker, and then he became a money manager. And my godfather, godfather is connected to the Reagans. You know, so there's that. There's name dropping.
It's not really that much. It's not about name dropping, but about like, okay, so early
world,
history.
I mean,
interesting history. Early childhood effect. Sure. How did this,
I don't know. I mean, I think I was fairly independently minded at a young age, and I was betrayed at a young age because they, are somewhat sociopathic, you know. Yeah, because they're raised by nannies, and so their social connection with, like, mom, dad. I think it's people have the same issue today with technology. It gets too much of a buffer. And so there's that kind of separation. And so they're, you know, I think they were loving, but at the same time kind of oblivious. So I was, like, left alone at my, when I was one, you know, for, 3 weeks
with nannies.
Yeah, with my grandma. Mm. You know, and they went off to Barbados or something like that.
Do you have siblings?
But it didn't. I remember I was like, that had a. Yeah, I have a brother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's a born again Christian.
Now?
And a magician. Good magician.
Huh.
But yeah, he's not a very accountable person.
So how would you describe your early childhood spirituality? What was the home spiritual world like?
Well, I was kind of into it. I was sort of like charging ahead with like wanting to go to church and like praying for miracles. And
so you were into Jesus?
No, not at all.
What were you? What was the home religion?
Well, we're Christian. I mean, we were Episcopalian, but I didn't really buy into any of it, like from a dogmatic point of view.
Oh, you
at a young age, okay. Instead of was chiseling out my own, you know, the idea of prayer and. You know, I noticed something that's really kind of absurd and funny I'll mention is that I swear to God, on Sundays when I would pray, my farts didn't stink. That was one of the...
Yeah. That has something to do with Sunday
intelligently. That was evidence.
That's an intelligently designed gastrointestinal system.
We were just talking about poop,
I was like,
too.
What the hey? I would like test. I go, like, damn, it's Sunday again.
Only fart on Sundays.
Well, actually, if you actually studied, like, I studied a lot of yoga and lived in a cave in India for a while, and that was kind of a powerful experience. And the effect of the, I didn't, wasn't monitoring my gas so much. Although in India, it's funny, people have so much stomach problem that they will constantly talk about the most wretched things, and it's normal.
I've had the most wretched diarrhea.
It's a normal event, but purifying the body. With spiritual stuff does have a effect on your body odor. I mean, for example, at the Berkeley hot tub, a place you guys have heard of, it's like at the time it was completely public. You could just go in there and take a hot tub, and this guy set it up for free. A really nice community event. And this one guy showed up, and he'd just been around.
That's down south. Essex.
Esalen's a natural one. But this was in like downtown Berkeley.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Anyway, this guy had just seen a shooting, you know, violence, and you could smell it. I mean, it was like all over the guy. The guy stunk.
Wow.
So, you know, and I flew to Kashmir a long time ago and almost got killed in a crossfire.
Huh.
Just getting off the airplane. The immediate, effect is like, oh my God, this place stinks, and like bad, like smells like death.
You like what is death?
It smells
smell
like poo poo. Rotting, poo poo blood. It just smells bad. Rot.
I've been so fortunate as to never experience smelling death.
Yeah, if you're ever unlucky. In a war zone, it's in a sort of area like Kashmir or the Middle East. You know?
I mean, after 9/11, if you went to New York, it was pretty pungent.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You got you got a death smell there.
Yeah, big time.
Near the okay, and it was
And dogs, the hunting dogs would get just depressed. They
really?
Were like really depressed. Yeah, the dogs that would hunt for survivors.
Oh.
They would just refuse to work eventually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because it was so
just depressing for the dogs.
It was too depressing for the dogs, even. Yeah.
See, dogs. Love.
Yeah, I mean, there's some stuff about 9/11 that I could share, but I'm actually. Unclear if it would be safe for me to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Like,
well,
we want
you to be safe.
I don't know where this is all going.
This podcast.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to go where we
just
want it to.
Who checks it out?
I mean, YouTube, iTunes.
Are we all like past this idea that 9/11 was possibly an orchestrated deal? Are we all kind of like okay with that? Or you guys?
I am of the firm belief that it's at least partially an inside job.
Okay.
I'm of the firm belief that we allowed it to happen at the minimum. The NORAD stand down alone is like, what are you talking about? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Hmm. Let alone Building 7, and it was never on fire, and it collapsed in place.
A lot of questions, you're saying.
I think that there's too much free fall video to compare these buildings to.
A lot of question marks.
Another one right there if you want.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, there's too many question marks, too many free fall building videos that look like 9/11, and no building has ever collapsed from fire. In fact, that building's been crashed into by airplanes before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So,
but not a jet.
No, but not as big a jet, but it was already crashed into, and it had been blown up, too. It's there's too much.
The example I like to use, it's just the concept. I like to draw these sort of parallels to kind of clarify it. It's easy to see, like, if something's out of tune, for example, and you give a backdrop of, like, another tuning, and you can tell, like, are you C-sharp and 25 cents? And you just add the little background of C-sharp, period, and you'll know exactly if you're sharp or flat. So if you look at a surveillance camera at some beat-up garage, okay, in the middle of nowhere in Alabama, and some schmuck goes there and robs them. There's some video footage of this guy robbing them some two-bit little garage, right? Now, the I don't know what the price tag is on the Pentagon, but it's expensive. I know they have, like, super surveillance.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So why the fuck would there be no footage?
There is footage.
I just saw a little flash.
Yeah.
I see no head-on, and there's
no... they didn't release the footage.
No evidence of a of any kind of profile or wings. Anyway,
or
I
engines.
See any... Yeah. I don't see any reason... I mean, I thought the whole thing was a setup in the get-go before I even saw the buildings come down.
Really?
And I was talking to an Iranian guy, and the night before I was dreaming about, you know, getting bitten by mosquitoes that had processed some anthrax pathogen, and I was going to become immune to the plague that the terrorist unleashed.
Well, that's a good dream, but kind of creepy.
But just kind of, it was a kind of a creepy time.
Yeah.
You know, 9/11.
People said they could feel 9/11 before it happened. Like,
yeah.
There was like, there are random number generators that spiked right before it happened all
it.
Over the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the day before.
Spiked with non-randomness.
Oklahoma City bombing. Oh. I was shocked out of my bed by, you know, have you ever had falling dreams? This was like falling up dream. I was like, literally.
I have those when I'm falling asleep. When I lay down in bed, I'll have a falling dream.
Right. And this was just like, but it was like an explosion. And like, I felt. Anyway, it's interesting the kind of connection that we have. And
are you feeling confident that 9/11 was at least partially an inside job?
I don't see how it could not have been because of the timing and the lack of transparency. So.
And the insurance right beforehand, and then the money right after.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of evidence to show that there was some kind of privy. But I mean, like one CIA operative said, "Well, that happened," and there's other stuff, you know. in the works, you know, we have to just forget about it. You know, I mean, not forget, but keep looking. I mean, my latest thing is this whole thing. We demonized Assad and did this and that. And then now we've, you know, whatever, we're just in a kind of quagmire of weird, vague stuff, you know, around Medicare, where it's kind of coming close to home and getting some of the middle American people maybe riled up. Golly gee, there's a whole bunch of them out there. Billy Bob and Billy Sue.
Well, Billy Bob and Billy Sue make up the majority of this country, I think.
Yeah, and they're the one with, they got sharp pitchforks and they had to shoot a rifle.
Yeah, and they got a few rifles. Yeah,
they got a few rifles. And they got staying power.
Okay.
So anyway, I don't know. Those folks so at some point might become highly disgruntled. But I think that the whole idea, the whole idea of them being, you know, out of the box and creative is a whole new shoe. But you never know; the 100th monkey factor could kick in, and it could be like wildfire.
Now I know what the 100th monkey factor is, but would you mind explaining it to our audience?
Well, it's just like if you look at popularity of something, suddenly something becomes super popular, and there was an experiment done back. It's a book called The 100th Monkey by, I think, Ken Keyes. It's written
Ken
back...
Keyes-y? Like, no. Wavy Gravy?
No. His name's Ken Keyes with K-E-Y-E-S. And kind of a New Age guy, you know, transpersonal psychology and all that. That's what I took a transpersonal psychology class from a guy named Bob Jones.
Transpersonal psychology with Bob Jones.
Yeah. You wanted Bob would have
us laugh in class just for fun.
Did you want his name to be Ananana Kranda Dazana Banda or something like that? Would that be more normal?
No, I think Bob was just fine with his simplicity.
J.R. Bob Dobbs.
But anyway, the bottom line.
Get to the bottom of this.
Is that they did an experiment giving monkeys sweet potatoes and on Japanese islands. And when the certain number of monkeys learned the behavior of washing the potato, it happened that every monkey suddenly did it, not only on that island, but the other islands. And there was this kind of invisible hand that kind of did sign, like, look, watch potato, then good. And so they all kind of like...
Get the dirt off the potato.
They all cosmically kind of like got it. You know, it's kind of
really?
A... Yeah, weird. So looking at the... I think that kind of accounts for some of this behavior that we've been seeing with a sort of fundamentalism, because human beings... This is why I wore my little cow shirt today. Because there's this kind of thing, like, my father's into, like, go Bears, and, like, we're into, like, go Warriors, and this hoo, hoo, hoo kind of monkey-like, you know, behavior of, like, we're really into it. And this is, like, we're driven, you know, we kind of like, why? And they're like, well, because. And you just have this kind of blind animal like, we're part of the team. Mm-hmm. And so people have been parking their minds into these convenient places because the world's just too complicated and intense and too hard to understand. And like, you know, I don't know if you like read this newspaper and watch Fox News or just whatever. I mean, just everything's going so fast. I think a lot of people want to simplify. how do they do that? They just suddenly believe the earth is flat.
Phenomenon bores. It doesn't bore me. I'm frightened by that. You can look now and see live images of the curvature of the earth.
Uh-huh. Right.
But even I have people who I call friends who are like, I don't know, Drew. I mean, have you? I'm like, no.
You have friends that actually say that?
Yeah.
But see, they're
flat earthers?
I have a couple of flat earther friends. It's true.
Huh. That's a thing. And that's a kind of. You know, it's mentally ill, but it's like, you know, we can agree about, I mean, it's clearly an insane thing. It's just like if I suddenly had to, hey, Betty, hey, thanks, you know, whatever, I can't really do this, but, you know, pretend that I have like some bodacious blonde.
Okay.
That's like my cheerleader wherever I go.
Sure.
And just, you know, this is going to help me along. Mm-hmm. So I just suddenly.
An imaginary friend.
Do this to kind of, for my self-esteem or feeling of security. I have a feeling that the flat earthers, it's a simplification where you're just, you know, it's all fine. You know, we're all going to heaven.
All going to heaven anyway.
As Jack Kerouac said, this microphone's going to heaven.
And this piece of refrigerator or that thing going to heaven?
It's all going to heaven.
What are we going to do with all this stuff in heaven?
I don't know.
Well, about the leaves we see? They fall, they compost.
Well, I guess, you know, you can kind of hide them in the clouds. But
Totally. Because planes, you know. I mean, that would be fine for airplanes.
I mean, I thought Jack was pretty astute with that one. He looked like he was, you know, like 95% liquor.
95%
liquor. I mean, that poor guy. A born healer becoming genius writer. And then he like kind of hits, you know, he was a flame.
Yeah, he just.
A fireball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
high burning.
You got to love him. Anyway, Jack Kerouac, everybody. Reach out and touch someone. All right.
All right.
So, conspiracy. But, you know, I'll tell you another thing about, since we're talking about 9/11. Are we okay with 9/11?
We're okay with 9/11. Okay.
So, I just bring this to people's attention. I play chess and it's like thinking. Thinking, if you think about things, they understand the motivation of somebody. And for example, if somebody is like your spouse and lying to you or whatnot, then, you know, you kind of get cues, right, that they might be lying or something might be coming on, right? I mean, if for example, I don't know if you've dealt with that before, but, you know, there's
I have, but I'm in a relationship now that it's different.
Okay. Yeah. It's okay to lie.
Well, we don't. if we did, we would admit quickly or something. Like, we're pretty communicative.
Right. I think that's the only way. I mean, that's like, sane, because you're, like, helping. But, I think, tendency for people to, you know, get off page with any kind of relationship, you know, and... start playing again. But I'm sorry. I was kind of
September 11th.
Going back. Yeah, my point. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So I'm
I got distracted because you brought more substance.
I'm gonna light this up.
I automatically went into like forgetful mode, but it's similar. The whole idea of just asking questions and seeing the cues about motivation. You know, you start understanding people's motivations. So, yeah, there's just such a tendency to get behind this kind of rah-rah team thing. And, like, suddenly we're like, okay, look, Assad kills babies. You know, and we're all like, okay.
Poisoned his people.
Yeah. Oh, you going to say, like, oh, that's not bad? Of course you're going to say it's bad because it's like, oh, it's like the worst thing. It's exactly what Saddam Hussein did. And apparently he's, like, the second cousin or something of Saddam Hussein, apparently.
Assad?
Yeah.
Ah, fuck.
I know. But, and you know, it, it's twisted.
I like
though.
How he talks. I want him to be a good
Assad
guy.
Assad is a nice guy.
Weirdly,
you know,
is.
It's hard to even know because they're so like, so removed from actually meeting like, these people. Yeah.
He's like, but if you look at it in an interview, I mean, he's not a blathering, slobbering madman.
No.
And so if he's being attacked by all these different people, okay. Why would he then turn around just like randomly poison a bunch of like there might be some militant in there, but like, you know, do the most self-incriminating acts possible with no like a utility. There was no utility behind right. what he did. So it's like, duh. And it perfectly sets us up to whatever. We're going to send it. We're going to blast off, you know, $1 billion of bombs and put some.
Yeah,
little,
we took an airfield out, right?
Kind of. I mean, supposedly. We kind of just we dented it, you know, it's cost a lot of you know, like, you know, like. Your entire life salary times, you know, 100, two.
I think that
know,
was okay. more of a psychological attack. Use the biggest bomb that we have on a non-target.
Oh, no, that was in the biggest bomb was, isn't that in
that was a different
Afghanistan.
Target?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That was okay. Afghanistan. Because right, Assad, right. He, we bombed his airfield.
Yeah, we right. sent he fancy cruise people, missiles in.
Supposedly. And then there were jets taken off like
but
the
then,
next
you know,
day.
The story about the gas yeah. only lingered so long. And it was kind of then, it kind of blew away. You know, we didn't talk, and then, like, we didn't like, keep going after Assad. Oh, he just killed a bunch of babies. Why wouldn't we just, like, charge in there and get Assad? Rah, rah, rah. You know, now the Soviets are playing a very cool game with the whole thing, but it's a very unfortunate picture. I don't know. I'm more concerned with domestic issues.
So, like, okay, domestic issues, internal terror or and/or destruction. Like, do we have a problem of false flag inside job operations in general?
I'm sure. I mean, I think it really depends on the popularity of the president and if his little, like, you know, Joker versus Batman, you know, kind of, he's like the Joker, I think. Like with his little collection.
Current P-Dog?
collection of goons, you know? It's like really.
Well, draining the swamp and then bringing in billionaires from the swamp is like a funny thing. Yeah.
So I don't have a lot of faith that these people are going to be effective. North and South Korea apparently just signed a peace treaty. Like, get these guys. Out. You know, Trump was just like a fucking troublemaker.
You could swear on the show.
You're allowed to fucking cuss on this show,
right.
Man.
Great,
free
great,
to be you.
Great. I'm trying to cut back, but you know, you know,
fuck it.
This
fuck
is
it.
Really important to recognize that, like, the world and the American people, for that matter, can take the bull by the horns. And
wait, what does that mean? I don't know what that means. Tell me what that means.
Well, in this case, North and South Korea avoided any U.S. involvement, and they signed a treaty. They said, okay.
When did that happen?
This happened.
Just fucking happened?
Just fucking happened. God
damn
fuck.
It.
Just one.
That's great
yeah.
news.
I know. We don't have anything to complain about now. You know.
Isn't that great news?
Yeah, I mean, China has all these new, whatever their Dragon 15, whatever they're called. Anyway, they're like a fancy new multiple, you know, warhead missile that can reach Tampa Bay. They set them up on January 23rd this year, just right before Trump was set in. And so, you know, they're like going, hello. They're all set up in Manchuria. They're all, they can reach the United States in like 30 minutes, I think. And they can reach like Florida in 45 minutes. I mean, darn fast.
That's pretty
and
fast.
And lots, can't shoot them down. So they just like set up.
can't shoot them down.
No, they can't. And they're just like, okay, look, guys, here we are. So there's all these strong players on the table that are sincere. And Trump's just like, it's like a character from like Douglas Adams, you know, like Hitchhiker Guide to the Galaxy. Like, he's just going to go skipping off into his imaginary, like, spacecraft and, like, leave the planet. He's not. He doesn't have an imaginary spacecraft. 35 psychologists from Yale just said, hey, he's crazy. You know, they said, he's delusional, man, and on top of being a narcissist. We have a Dr. Strangelove situation. Hmm. But Dr. Strangelove is the sane one. And the Herr Trump is the general.
Herr Trump.
General Ripper.
I don't know. You can't be that successful and be insane.
Well, I would say that he's clever. But I think that in terms of.
I think he's way smarter than people give him credit for.
Oh, really? Okay. And Well, I would. I'm a Gemini, so I can kind of relate to his personality based on.
Is he a Gemini?
Well, yeah, he's also a New Yorker, and that's how he. That's how he deals with things.
Yeah, I have an appreciation for his style a little bit, but I just think that, you know, so far what I've seen, it's just, yeah, it's all. I don't see anything enabled by his position at all that's has any moral fiber. You know, whereas Barack Obama strikes me as somebody that had moral fiber. But I think, you know, I mean, Trump talks kind of in an exciting tone. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, the question all the people, I guess, in my general camp is just that, what has he done? That's kind of the main question everyone's asked.
I don't think we fully know what he's done, you know?
Well, he's certainly tried to shoot down a bunch of stuff, so. And he's shot down one Syrian jet, so.
Well.
You know. Anyway, we always have to judge people by that.
You know, there's plenty of space to talk about the president, our current president, right? And it's like.
Yeah, not many people have talked about him.
It's like all anyone talks about, right?
Right.
So it's like, I think it's good to spend some time giving opinion. And I think it's easy to critique him. And it's much harder to find like really, really valuable assets. You have to sort of story tell and hope and dance around some things.
Mm.
But people do. People do find like things like, well, he did this and he's done that and you didn't know, but he actually lowered this to that. But there's like little things you hear.
Okay, okay.
It's super easy, and I regularly do and probably will continue to criticize our current president.
Yeah.
Because I find him to be repulsive.
Right. The people that want to shoot him down, though, see, you got to have to ask.
But see, the shooting is like no violence, though, because like I'm like, okay, give him a shot.
Shooting down is a metaphor,
right?
To take down
figurative
for clarity
down.
Here for those in the audience that might not have a literal.
You know, we've taken this show on the road. We went out to a free speech chat, and the podcast for Empathy and Imagination went out to Antifa and Trump supporters at a spot, and we interviewed both sides, and we walked around and did
a
thing.
Nice,
and it was cool. And there was the overwhelming number one surprise for me. And fact to be gathered was it was Antifa causing the trouble.
Antifa?
Antifa.
And what's Antifa? See, I'm...
See?
I don't know.
The quote-unquote anti-fascists. They were the ones...
There's an anti-Trump...
They were the ones acting the most fascist.
They were blowing bombs up and they were throwing things at people.
Oh, this is the guys dressed in the black?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
In the photographs, I saw that.
But the Trump supporters were reliably calm. In fact, they brought in a motorcycle group to act as extra security to keep the peace, and they stayed calm.
Mm-hmm.
And the pattern that we saw that day has only repeated itself time Antifa and the Trump supporters show up.
Is this in Cal Berkeley?
This is right.
Yeah, this was right in front of City Hall.
Yeah, I saw that from my boat. Actually, I was out sailing and I saw smoke rising up from there. It was very dramatic. Yeah, I saw this big plume of smoke. It was really fun. You know?
Yeah, thought, helicopters something's hovering going on over there.
Yeah, but yeah, it sounds like the behavior was this question I brought up to a millennial today who was over picking some berries and giving me some of my goods back. He was eBaying. He's one of my mentors.
Okay. A millennial mentor.
Yeah, a mentor. that's
yeah,
your
mentor
that's
doesn't
a,
have to
joke,
be older
a joke
than
slip,
you.
Really.
Well, we got a Gen Xer and a millennial here on the show, so.
That's
you know.
True.
Okay, great.
Gen X, represent. And
anyway, he's of the opinion that violent solutions would not work.
Yeah.
And so
I think that's why we have free speech, so we can avoid violence.
I'm sticking with nonviolent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the people that were supporting the Black Panthers, and I don't want to ruffle any Black Panther feathers, but, you know, the approach of that versus, like, King, it looks like the King approach, you know, is also during a slightly different cultural period.
Right.
But, I mean,
you
things
think
were
that's
changing.
A better approach than the more, like, Black
well,
Panther
it had
enough, thing?
It, well, it had a f- stain. It seemed to have some real power.
Real lasting effect, yeah. More so.
I mean, I think the Black Panther thing, from my limited understanding, was very specific to stuff that was happening, I think, in Philadelphia. Yeah. Anyway.
Thanks.
In that arena.
Do you have since we're on the topic, and then we eventually are going to steer you off to another topic.
All right.
But what do you think
you
about
are.
Black
I'm
Lives?
I'm not organizing.
Good. Black Lives Matter.
Well, I saw a post today from a friend that was frowning on it a little bit based on her experience at the event. I don't know if it was a gathering or supposed to be a protest, but they were, there was an exclusionary aspect as opposed to the inclusion.
Was how, what
well,
was the...
there was not. It was not welcoming to non-African Americans.
Oh darn!
That was her take on it. I don't know. I wasn't there.
Is your friend? What race is your friend?
She's white. Yeah.
White person. Hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, she's also pretty crazy.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't really get...
It's a mitigating factor.
I mean, not that... I mean, I would say only 25% of my friends are loosely crazy. But she's
not
in the 5... She's in the 5%
time. I'm professionally
crazy. I don't know her very well, but I know that she's a wild cannon. But anyway.
This is a little slow. You gotta...
Slow, huh. Yes. Slow in, slow out. So I'm trying to... promote slow, although I move too fast myself. That's one reason. We're sitting here just outside the Hype Ray from Berkeley and Oakland,
yeah,
in a little town called Crockett, and it's kind of a forgotten place, a forgotten works.
Yeah, this is kind Gradient Studios.
Richard Brodigan country with nice,
yes,
warm air and ripe fruit.
It's nice here.
Trout fishing in America.
You know, we can actually relax here and spread out and make noise. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I mean, this is like the heart of America.
Yeah,
yeah.
This is good. I mean, America really is great.
It really
I
is.
I mean, have you guys like been in the really experienced how great America is?
I've left the country a couple of times, and
should
and
make America
like...
great again. That would be cool.
Oh.
No, America's already great.
It already is fucking amazing.
He was just talking about it. Yeah, he's probably just like throwing that out there. You know?
But the thing is, his lawyers wrote that or whatever, and that phrase is to say that was somehow better before, but in fact, we're in continual improvement. That's how life goes. So
yeah. I mean, it's a brilliant phrase, no, for sure.
Make America great.
Yeah.
Again.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
You feel...
I mean, say what you want about Trump, but his marketing is pretty spot on.
Okay, make America great.
Because it's aspirational, right?
Okay.
Make America great again.
Again.
And think about Hillary's slogan. What was it?
Better together.
See, you can't even remember it.
Oh yeah, better.
Stronger together.
Was that
hard
it?
To say? Not very aspirational, right?
Yeah, and we need a new narrative.
I don't know. I mean, Trump's thing is again just this kind of.
He's a marketer.
Put yourself in a little bot, like just it's like Matrix-esque. You know, it's like, just shut off. Don't think about everything. Everything's just great.
I think we agree that one of the main core underlying things that feels like there's a problem with what's going on is we don't have a narrative. We don't have a story we're trying to propel. We don't have heroes and villains. We have the market, and we have the market against everyone. So everyone's against everyone in the market.
Well,
every dollar is owned by one
person. Culturally, we don't have an aspirational narrative.
Yes, so
like
we
did
mean
in the '60s. You know, it was like let's go to the space, let's go to the moon.
Mm. Yeah, and now let's make the most money.
No, now it's like what's the next best? What's the next app
business
going to be? What's the next startup?
Hmm.
And that's super
boring.
Well,
the like '70s were about like fun. Like,
yeah.
I mean, explore the spiritual, the body,
spiritual,
the grow food. I mean, people were kind of practicing the 60s stuff a little bit.
Yeah. Once.
There was that. That was one slice of the past.
And it was always like the year 2000. That's going to be the future. And then we hit the year 2000 and it was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Well, it's
the towers just fell and the world sucks and everything's fucked up.
Computers started kicking in.
Let's make some more money and make some more apps.
Yeah.
So I think we sort of lost our mojo.
Well, I think the mojo is it's the soul, and it's like the connection. So that's where, like in the '70s, people were more hands-on, and things started getting more and more remote, and things got all kind of militarized by Reagan. I remember that like cutoff; it was very violent because I moved from Oakland to Lafayette, and Lafayette they used words like "tar baby."
Wow.
Yeah. Do you got any tar baby friends? They asked me. I was like, "What? I'm from Oakland, you know." Like, we used
African American.
Yeah, we used words in Oakland like homeboy, cool. You know, we were sincere.
Cat.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we were like, whatever, motherfucker.
But so it wasn't so serious.
No, yeah, it was like, yeah, it was more fun, and it was like, it was kind of, we kind of had a, our own little black way about it, you know, at our, even in Montclair. Cause, so there was a lot of, you know, it was fairly integrated. Lafayette, no, it was very white and very, it was, you know, and they used words like neat and swell, like from Leave It to Beaver, I swear to God. And like where they got that from, but that was their lingo, the local kids' lingo. Neat. And like nice face, swell.
Nice face, nice face.
Nice face. What a
like
weird
these
compliment.
Brats, like fucking, they did not understand. They did not understand cool at all.
Have a nice face.
Culture shock. So yeah, Reagan took office, and then it was very, you know, things became much more macho. You know, it was that kind of thing. And I think Trump is kind of mirroring a little bit of that, you know, it's this kind of thing from Obama being the, you know, feely, you know, liberal or whatever, enabling everybody, you know, to be like happy. You know, it's like, no, we got to buckle down on those people. They're having too much fun.
Yeah. Trump's like, so, Trump
we have
so
to monopolize.
He's so like full of bluster, you know, he can't, it seems like he can't restrain himself.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
And he's just lying so often.
I think he's just ill-equipped for the
lying,
job.
Lying, A-B testing, call it what you want.
Ill-equipped. I don't think it's his, he's in the wrong job. You know, it's like not his thing. He's not somebody that wants to be all connected to the American people and bother with that. He can like barely make a connection with his like wife or something.
They his say kids. He's just very not, there's not people close to him as
they.
A person.
They say that.
They say.
They.
I got they glasses.
They say I want to meet they because they say a lot of stuff.
We should have they on the podcast.
We should.
My friend talks about the they.
The they.
Yeah. That's his term for they. The they.
The they.
I've always been fond of that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Some people think that they like have tunnels underneath America and chemtrails. Are you guys chemtrails?
Like the Morlocks?
You guys don't believe in chemtrails, yeah? That they're
well,
geoengineering.
I worked as a flight attendant for a long time.
And what happened?
And
did you see them loading them the ship up with the airplane up with special?
They weren't. They didn't. What I think happened was there were a few military spraying cloud control experiments, and then that was probably it.
Okay. Interesting.
What are they? What is this chemtrails? Were they apparently supposedly
metals.
Allegedly?
I think aluminum dust.
Yeah,
just and to make everyone sick.
It's to inoculate the soil. And people measured soil.
Inoculate?
Well, to sterilize.
No.
Yeah.
Why?
In Washington, was a people
why
who,
would they
who
want
were,
to sterilize?
They were talking about chemtrails overhead, and they measured their soil over the years, and they found an increase in these metals only after the chemtrails overhead in their soil in these farms out in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I always ask, like, what's the motivation? What's the end game? What is the
right,
motivation
that's what I'm
behind
ask
all
the
these
control.
Conspiracies?
Control.
But I mean, if you just live in a hellscape, eventually, wouldn't you be screwing yourself over in the long run or your family?
Well, especially if you really were taking it seriously, you know, like Y2K. I knew this one guy. He built a special, like, foam survival, like. Geodesic dome, you know, foam geodesic dome.
For Y2K.
Yeah, and just buried himself, like, out in the desert. And then was going to, you know, he was out there with his kids during
Y2K. People were so worried about that.
He's a maniac.
It sounds kind of fun, though, to be out with your kids in the desert. That
I think,
cool.
I mean, I think Greg enjoyed the whole process, but it was a waste of money. he just couldn't get a job, so he did this instead. His wife was the
bread. I can't get a job,
she
so
brought
I'm just
going to
spend
home.
A bunch of money.
His wife brought the bread home, so it was compensation, motivation.
So what do you think what's the next Y2K going to be?
Oh, I don't know.
It seems like China wouldn't want to bomb us because we buy all their stuff.
Yeah. I think it's a terrible thing to think about. But if I start dreaming about mosquitoes again, I don't know.
Number one killer.
You never know. I mean,
mosquitoes are the number one killer.
I mean... Yeah, I've had some nuclear bomb dreams lately. Mm. They were fairly believable. Anyway, been a little bit of a pattern this last year. Mm. But
Burning Man is sort of like a prep like for a post-apocalyptic survival.
Yeah, I've gone for the last so 5 years.
Kind of. It's so more of a fashion. It's like post-apocalyptic fashion.
But it's, I mean, it's fun. It's so harsh. It that's what I mean.
I had a lot of fun.
So harsh.
I had a lot of fun there. It was.
When did you go?
Oh, I went about 3 years ago, I reckon. And
you guys were both there the same year.
We were there the same year.
I had a longboard. And
oh, I didn't see you.
Yeah, the surfing's great out there.
No, it was great. I would get people to tow me, but I could push along real fast. Big wheels, dirt board.
Oh, dirt. Okay.
Dirt longboard.
That's a good. Yeah. That's a good thing.
It was really fun. Yeah.
Did you have your sit time?
I did. I played for a mermaid. That was my greeting. Like I was carrying the sitar on the longboard, dirt board, and then this mermaid came along, and like we sat like under a rock, you know, in the ocean of Burning Man, and I played sitar for her.
That's
anyway,
cool.
It's a delightful beginning.
It's a lovely place, isn't it, Burning Man?
Yeah, I mean, all the weather.
Sure.
No. I was channeling a friend there. Yeah. Anyway.
So you've only been once? I've only been once, too. Last year for the first time.
Yeah. I'm not a real big fan. I didn't really feel any kind of heart. I'm like part of the Burning Man tribe. I didn't get a burner name. You know, I figure if you're like really into the thing, somehow you can kind of tell, you know, certain people if they're like, they're marked.
Uh-huh.
You just know.
Yeah.
They're in.
Well, I bear the mark.
They probably will die and go to Burning Man planet.
Yeah, you know, that sounds cool. That sounds cool.
Would that be like Io, like the moon of Jupiter that's all volcanoes?
Oh, yeah, that's the name of my boat.
Io?
I guess I
Io.
Might be halfway nice. There. You know? Nice.
There we go. So,
yeah, right. She had a tough life, Io.
I got an idea.
Yeah.
Why don't you hand me that baby, and I want to show you guys this video. We're going to do this topic.
Okay.
And I'm going to get your guys' reactions. Let's talk about it a little bit, see what we can learn.
We'll have one more beer.
Io, here we come. Set the controls for Io.
So technical fun.
Okay, guys, watching?
What's your name again?
Aubrey.
What?
Aubrey.
Aubrey. Cool. Good, like East Coast name.
Sounds like a southern
yeah,
boy.
Yeah, maybe
name.
Aubrey. I think you're right. More of a southern. Yeah.
I can't really see that. What am I looking at here?
Here it goes. Ready?
Yeah, from like.
So with a flush toilet, basically you take really nice clean drinking water and our shit and mix the two together. Both wonderful resources, when you mix them together you create a toxic problem.
You guys know about
so with a compost toilet system, you're able to capture that amazing resource and take care of it and treat it in a way that removes any pathogens or problems and create a wonderful resource. You know, why would you buy in manure when you've got this resource right here? We basically use the style of toilet described by Jay Jenkins in his Human Manure Handbook, which is essentially just doing your business into buckets and covering it with nice cover material, usually sawdust, and then we hot compost it in a pallet-framed compost.
Composting toilets, like composting your own shit, processing your own toilet waste, is a real basic fundamental thing that we should all practice.
I wish I brought some of my fruit. You know, I didn't have time. Hmm. But the mulberries, man, amazing.
Oh, God. It's been loading this whole time.
That's weird.
That is really weird.
It's very English.
Technical difficulties on this podcast?
Can't imagine it.
This is a great place.
Isn't this nice?
Yeah. How long have you guys been here?
Since December.
Nice.
All right. Well, we'll get back to that.
I guess our internet went down
again.
People.
Yeah. So, poop toilets.
Poop toilets. So they're saying.
So if you think about marine toilets and the trouble they have, and you think about where all the water's going from all of our poop. I want to use a little empathy and imagination, maybe get your topic on. Like, okay, so Closing the loop, humanure, composting your own poop, and then doing it correctly, scientifically, with measurements. And then you use it to put in the soil, and then stuff will grow from it that you can
then eat
again.
Yeah, it's not that complicated. When I was a kid in Oakland, we went on a tour. This was how the schools used to be. We had all this like free time and little funds to go cruising around. And we saw a completely sustainable house where they recycled their urine, their poop, and this really nice garden. It was, you know, it was they were like happy. Anyway,
so it was
not a rocket. You know, it wasn't. It's been around for a long time. You know, people do it all over Baja. You know, in India, they have like no choice.
Compost your own.
They just let it compost.
Effluvium and then use it.
So we take chemicals out of hydrocarbons and spray them all over to try to reinsert the chemicals into the ground that we extract. And then we poop in our drinking water and turn them both into poison by that process. And then we're wasting both directions all the way around.
Yeah, and then there's the issue of all the chemicals that people take, of the especially antibiotics. And then all that gets
in our poop.
It goes right through you, folks.
You think it's fear of shit? Because shit represents death?
Yes, I call it fecophilia, but it's actually called something else.
I think shit, death, and money are all symbols for the same thing. Hmm. Or shit and money are the symbols for death.
Huh.
Hmm.
But
I have to think about that one.
Check this out.
but you can't pay for things with shit.
This is FlexMag about phobias. Fear of feces. Feces is the natural byproduct of the digestive system. While it is viewed as an unpleasant by most people, they do not have a phobia with regard to its presence in their lives. However, some people with coprophobia have an aversion to feces that is intense and persistent. Huh. Why do people develop this phobia? There's also not much to like about feces. It's simply part of life for most people. It's something everything has to put up with, from changing dirty diapers to dealing with your own digestive ailments and complaints.
Yeah,
there's rarely a sense of pleasure when we focus on feces. This ill-smelling substance is the subject of countless bad jokes and punchlines. It's a part of the human and animal condition.
Yeah, and it's only, you know, they're saying it's ill-smelling, but that's just subjective, right?
Most poo I know about's bad, but sometimes, like, you hear, like, sometimes horse poop or something.
I'm saying we've evolved to think that it smells bad.
Our
it just
poop.
Smells the way it smells.
No, it stinks, man.
Well,
like cat shit stinks. My dog's poop is incredible.
But no,
yeah, but dogs
bad
dogs
us.
Eat their own poop, so they don't think their poop smells
that,
bad.
But you're not a dog.
But he's saying that it exists.
I don't just like imagine that it smells bad. Is that what he's?
Well, I'm saying we evolved to. To
well,
consider
we, I think,
it smelling bad.
Well, I think some people, are like hypersensitive about.
Because there are humans that are coprophilic too, that like their own.
But
poop.
The symbol of the
Salvador Dali, for example,
the poop is a symbol. I guess it's the. I mean, if you look at the way that the media is representing stories, there's this, stinky mess left by. What they're doing because it's so untrue. And so there's that aspect of of the symbol of death and poop. It's like the death of truth. It's like it leaves, there's a bad
emotional
vibe.
Fear,
and I think there's that kind of resonant thing in society where there's that feeling of that stuff. And so the what do you do with all the poop? It's a big question.
Well, poop used to kill people. We used to poop in the streets, and then our kids would play in it.
All this poop, and they get rid of it by transferring it to other people.
Yeah, you're transferring it to other people to take care of with water. It's like, it's so much more responsible to poop on your own property and like, take
right.
care of it.
And don't step in your own poop or others.
Just make an area,
Avoid poop at all costs.
Don't shit where you eat. I think that's the main guideline.
But if you shit where you grow food,
you're fine.
But if you eat in the garden,
I'm strongly considering. I was, actually planning on it, but not highly motivated because I have fish and I have fish emulsion in my 5-foot deep pond.
Poop.
Okay.
Poop. Joe poop. So, es poop. Muy rica.
Yeah. Es muy delicioso por la planta.
Yeah, yeah, baby. Oh, man, it's starting to take off, man. Yeah, I got like 10,000 grapes. I got mulberries, apricots, nectarines.
Mm, there you go.
Dang, man. You know, you can do a lot with poop. In this case, this is ancient poop because I live on an ancient poop alluvialness next to the alluvial poop of the Wildcat Creek. It's my coordinates, roughly.
When you think about the earth is basically one giant compost pile, right?
Well, the soil.
Yeah. The people are living, growing, dying, returning to the soil. Yeah.
Plants, animals, all of it is.
Everything.
Up in Tibet, they let the birds take it away.
Yeah.
You know, you got sky burials. You guys don't know sky burials?
Maybe we could have shit satellites.
They chop up people and offer them to the ravens. That's the sky burial. Or the vultures, excuse me.
That's a good way to go.
Yeah, no, they do a really nice job. And they use nice sharp knives. They very efficiently hacked up.
Huh. I think, what do they call it?
After they do 28 days or something of rituals.
Yeah.
They pray over the body, but it's cold up there, so it's not too hard for them to keep the body fresh.
It's more efficient than putting yourself in a box and
well, I think this is the death factor and the moribund factor here in our society is just that we're lost from caring for the dead and really being careful, and that carefulness is what like creates a real bond and glue. And so the more of that, the better. But you know, when people pass, we need to be careful. There's you know the reverence
when people die.
Well, the respect and the way we handle death often these days seems awfully brief.
Hmm. Yeah,
And I see like Hispanics in my neighborhood. Like, remember when we could a lot of them, and they put so much love and so much care around that event.
Almost like a party.
You know, I knew a guy that used to take care of pick up dead people up in Eugene, and he said they'd come and boop and put it in a rubber bag and off it goes, you know. In the middle of like Thanksgiving, and Uncle Bob drops and zoop, he's in the bag, zoop, he's gone.
Like, put him in a Ziploc bag.
Not really a real good process to kind of like grok the whole death experience.
That's true.
In Stranger in a Strange Land, Martians would eat each other
right at the end. I like that book.
that was their, you know, they did it.
I grok that.
Yeah, they did this without too much attachment.
Yeah,
where they did it more as an appreciation versus an attachment.
Yeah,
you guys ready?
Can you hand me a beer and I'll be ready.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Cheers. Yeah. All right, here we go.
What do we got?
We got this.
What is this? Okay, that's enough for me.
Composting toilets, like composting your own shit, processing your own toilet waste, is a real basic fundamental thing that we should all practice. It's a simple way of being of demonstrating self-responsibility. It took us a long time to lose our shit phobia, our phobia of fecal matter. We've lost that now. Not that we handle it, we don't have to handle it. So welcome to our toilet. For a start, it's composting toilet bucket batch system. We've got cover material, which we use old sawdust from the mill. It's already got bacteria and a bit of fungus in it. It's good. Our toilet is here. It's full. It needs emptying. So I'll put a little bit more cover material on the top just to top it off. And that will just get littered and then placed over here until we have about 10
of them.
He's
from New Zealand. We'll
make a compost. And so we put a bit of cover material into the bottom of the bucket, and then back in here and it's as that easy. So you go make your deposit, put a bit of cover material on, leave it, and then when we've got a certain amount of buckets, we go to the compost and add straw and garden waste and kitchen waste, and we build it. This is one I did maybe a week ago, and we'll put the compost thermometer in here and see what we're looking at.
Yeah.
We're still looking at 50 degrees, it's going up. It got up to 65 degrees the other day.
128 degrees Fahrenheit.
You know, there are pathogens you have to consider. There's roundworm eggs and all these different kinds of worm eggs that you can exist in your manure. And if you do a hot compost, that's the safest way because you can nuke all those things within hours. If you can't heat it up, if you don't get to that hot temperature, then you can just let time and microbial competition do its magic.
You have to leave it for an extra year.
Rather than 9 months, has to be left for 2 years if you don't get it hot.
So you build a dish. Under there you build a dish, so any juice that goes on there goes into the middle rather than out the sides because you want to keep it clean. Then you build, go over to the willow trees and get some sticks and put a network of sticks underneath to keep it up off the ground. And then I use straw or grass, dry grass. Over the summer I cut grass and dry it out and make a pile. And use straw when I haven't got enough of that. And then make a nest and then put the humanure into the nest in the middle. And then layer of grass or a bit more straw. And I usually chuck a little bit of old compost in there too to sort of seed it. And you don't need to do that, but I do that. And then more buckets, more of a nest, more buckets, and then cap it off with weeds and straw and stuff.
Yeah,
and then I put the thermometer in it because that gives us an accurate reading as to whether it's fired or not. So we've got 52 degrees after a week. So that's going to start to move down now. And over here is what you get. I'll put it in a bag, but you don't need to. That there is about a year old. It's got lots of worms in it. We put all our garden waste and all our kitchen waste in here. But the worms are a good sign. If you've got worms, it means it's not too acidic and yum, good stuff. And that goes straight on the garden and the plants will love it. And we love the plants.
So we've been sort of doing this style of composting for about 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
And
it creates a
wonderful resource that we use on our garden. Yeah, when it's finished composting, it doesn't look like or smell like anything like poo. It's just beautiful black compost.
Yeah, okay, so I'm just adding humanure compost to our lower bed.
So he's pooping on his garden.
And
right
I just dug that garden up and I'm just going to sprinkle it around like that.
Yeah.
And then I'll dig it in. And we'll just dig that in and she'll be ready to plant. It'll be perfect.
We can use it on our garden because we've monitored it closely. We've watched the temperature. We know it's all the pathogens have been nuked. We feel confident in our process.
They eat this food.
So we feel safe to use it in our garden.
Composting toilets are integral to a closed-loop system where waste is captured and reused rather than being sent away for someone else to deal with through expensive, polluting, and energy-intensive processing. A well-managed composting toilet does not smell or attract flies, and many people have them inside their homes. The first step in composting humanure is overcoming our socially conditioned fear of poo and viewing it as a resource rather than as a waste product.
It's for everyone who wants to take more responsibility for themselves.
Huh, I'm on board.
And not pass it off.
I'm on board
everyone
with that.
Everyone who values their poo.
Yeah. Just gotta get some land, right?
Anyone can do this. It's just really a matter of being engaged and wanting to do it and getting the knowledge. It's a knowledge-based system.
Love it. Wouldn't go back. Once you start composting, you don't go back.
I was going to do it. Just burn up stuff and mix it up. You know, you get some ashes in there.
Chop it up and mix it
in.
I value
my
poo.
Get some ashes in there.
So he's like laughing about poo. Okay. Yeah. All right. You guys get it.
It's cool.
I do it.
I'm an avid
urinator in my garden.
Yeah, I think, but pooping though.
Oh, that's, yeah. I mean, you got to compost it.
Right, that's what they were talking about.
You want to definitely do that. Yeah. But the soil will do it, but like you want to kind of let it sit in the spot like before you use the soil.
Right.
So kind of compost there and bury it. Yeah. Keep it watered. You know, it gets.
I know.
Mix up your poop. I poop in my garden now periodically.
Cool.
Yeah, Indian style. Use water to clean your ass. See, this is something people don't.
So you poop in your garden occasionally.
Oh yeah, and then I just let this. I take a little plastic water bottle, and then I am able to clean my butt
without toilet paper.
Yeah, and that's simpler. You know, so.
That sounds cool.
It's an easy pressure nozzle.
Just kind of squeeze
it
at
your
keister.
You just let it run down the butt, your butt. This is what there's billions of people, in most of the world's population, does this method to clean their butt when they poop. Huh. They take water and they just pour it. Hmm. Honestly, it's about over half of our world population.
Yeah.
And so they do that. And then they often poop, like off in some spot where people poop. Yeah, pooping theirs.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. They let it be.
There's a poop problem in India, though.
I think there is. I mean, it's definitely some health effects.
Yeah. And what I'm saying is, if they compost, instead of leaving it in the street, if they compost it instead.
They've been learning this a little, just slowly.
You have to compost your poop. If you don't, you're on the stoop.
I think concept is now entered into heart of country. In Maharashtra, they have now discovered the way to handle the poop. This one disciple over there is the poop master.
You will touch the poop only with one hand.
He know how to take. They take the cow dung in India and they make so many things. They build the house. You know, they make the fire with the cow dung,
yeah.
And so forth and so on. They use it for medicine. On the
medicine?
Body. Yeah, for the cut.
Okay, what medicine is
they
it?
Well,
it is
fresh cow dung on cut. Then
what? Yeah, it is sterile. Like if you pee on a fungal infection, it'll sometimes clear it up because
cow
your pee
dung,
is
very
sterile.
Good, very good. You eat. Also
that's why you can basically drink your pee.
Eat fresh cow dung.
Is cow poop sterile? I don't know.
But
man.
I mean,
cow dung is
no.
It's pretty sterile. Yeah. No, really. I mean, well, you don't want
to Google.
Eat it. There's some people,
caca doodle doo?
Cacophilia?
Caca manja manja.
That means poop, eat.
Caca manja.
It would be copper.
Munch, munch, poop.
Coprophage. That's a poop eater.
It could be the name.
Coprophagist.
A coprophagist.
Right.
That's
coprophagist.
Oh, okay. Thanks. I'm glad someone knows. No, that dog's nice.
Words.
Hey, dog.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that's our show. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a great show, and I think
thanks for being our guest.
Hey,
K-Pax.
That was a blast.
K-Pax.
I'll go back to my planet in Marklar, where my Marklar is.
Cool.
Not quite as Marklar as the Marklar here, but.
Oh, so you don't live on your boat. You have a.
My Marklar is now in my house, where I have a nice fruit. Orchard in my backyard. And
cool.
A little pond and a decent neighborhood.
What?
But then after 8 years of suffering in Richmond.
Ah. Is this a Sings Good?
This is a Sings Good.
Yeah, that place is really good. But it's pretty good.
I don't mind you coming here and wasting all my time. Cause when you stand alone so near, I kinda lose my mind.
Yeah.
It's not the perfume that you wear. It's not the ribbons in your hair. I don't mind you coming here wasting all my time. I don't mind you hanging out
and talking in your sleep.
Doesn't matter where you've been,
as long as
it was deep,
yeah.
Very well.
You look so fancy, I can tell.
I don't mind you coming out and talking in your sleep.
I guess you're just what I needed. I needed someone to please. I guess you're just what I needed. I needed someone to please.
Yeah.
I don't mind you coming here wasting all my time. Where's when there's a low, so low near? I kinda lose my mind, yeah. I'm looking anywhere. It's not the ribbons in your hair. I don't want you coming here. Wasting all my time. I guess you're just what I need. I need someone to please. I needed someone to please.
Thanks, Rick Ocasek, for being a kick-ass songwriter.
Nice.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today on the podcast for Empathy and Imagination. Thanks to our guest, K-Pax.
K-Pax, thanks for being here.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you for being here.